Big Sister, the advice and culture podcast that brings you straight talking but non-judgmental chat from people who have been there, tried that, and have your best interests at heart. I'm Lisa Marie, or Liss, but you may know me online as Last Year's Girl. I'm a blogger, a writer, and a semi-professional Big Sister. Every episode, I team up with creative guests to discuss your dilemmas, share what we're working on, and hopefully recommend your favourite new music, books and stuff, and share the things that we've learned along the way. Well, I wasn't joking when I warned you that episodes were going to be a wee bit erratic. Since we're all a bit honesty here from your Big Sister, I don't mind telling you that I've been struggling a bit with my mental health over the past couple of months. I actually tried to take a complete break from social media, the internet and email during my week off work in August, but it didn't really make that much of a difference. I'm yet to reactivate my Facebook account though, or reinstall the email app on my phone, and I haven't particularly missed either of them, if I'm honest. My guest and I will be tackling two listener questions today, making up for lost time. But since they're both to do with making and maintaining friendships, it made sense to deal with them both together, particularly once you hear who's on. Lola Keeley is a novelist, screenwriter in training, and coder. After moving to London to pursue her love of theatre, she later wound up living every five-year-old's dream of being a train driver on the London Underground. She has since emerged, blinking into the sunlight, to find herself writing books. The Music in the Mirror and Major Surgery are out now from Ulva Publishing, and Slammed follows in October. Lola now lives in Edinburgh with her wife Kate, who you heard from a few episodes ago, and four cats, one of whom you also heard from a few episodes ago. She's also, and this is what sets her up as the perfect guest for the friendship episode of From Your Big Sister, my bezer. Next month, we celebrate the 20th anniversary of our meeting in a criminal law lecture at the University of Glasgow, not long before that move of hers to London, which was in no way connected with criminality. We recorded this episode a wee while ago, but I like that I've saved it to release so close to our 20-year bezerversary. So much so, I'm going to pretend that was intentional. Let's dig in. Start these chats, but
it wouldn't be you without the giggle, so yeah. It's all good.
But you get to use the microphone that you bought for me.
Yes, a show of faith. I believe in this project when it was still an idea and not real.
Well, in fact, when it wasn't even an idea, idea was I'm gonna do a podcast, and then 2 years later, I did a podcast. Can you introduce yourself? Who are you? What'd you do?
Oh God.
Why are you here?
So many questions, none of them with good answers. I'm Lola, also known as the Bezer, I guess, in certain circles. And publicly, anyway, I'm Lola Keeley these days. I have a whole bunch of surnames for different purposes. but that's the one I write under. That's the one I publish under. And I am mostly a writer these days, although I do some coding and web designing just to keep the lights on. And yeah, that's kind of my deal, and I'm Edinburgh based obviously, so I've crossed the Great Divide to come to Glasgow for this.
So yeah, you are here. Obviously we're gonna talk about all your awesome writing and things, but I wanted to get you on because we have been best friends for 20 years.
Oh, so many years.
Almost 20 years September. Do you wanna tell the listeners about our little meet cute?
It was so cute. It was like some rom-com stuff. yeah, we were in our first official week of university, having survived Freshers' Week, just. And in that whole week, I didn't meet anyone who was studying law. And so I walked in on the first day, like Billy No Mates, into the second class, because the first one I just tried to tough it out. And then the second class, I was like, oh my God, I need to speak to another human being. And scanned the whole room full of 200 potential criminal lawyers. And the only person who made eye contact and smiled back is on the other side of this podcast.
So, aww. There did I go. Smile? God.
It was quite a rigid, nervous smile. I assume it was pure panic at that point. But yeah, and that was a can I sit with you moment. You know, if it had been a cafeteria, it would have been slightly cuter.
Mm.
But criminal law lectures will have to do.
Yeah. What was it we were... those first lectures, it was about rape, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because I remember... good stuff. I remember coming home to my mum, you know, 17 years old, just 17 years old, and talking about, well, what did you learn in school today? And it's like, yes, we were talking about the mental elements of rape.
Yeah.
Or mens rea.
And actus reus. And, oh, yeah. Gosh, yeah. That's the only Latin I still remember, which is slightly disturbing, but it'll be handy when I'm eventually in court. So yeah, that was it. We're just babies back then, and now a couple of completed degrees on one side and a couple of failed degrees on the other. Here we are.
Degrees in progress.
Yes, degrees in progress. I apologise.
We do not like the word failure on this podcast.
No, that's true. I don't fail anymore. I just learn in more interesting ways.
Yeah. Find different paths, as a previous guest, I believe, said. So yeah, is that, do you think that's the sort of thing that you could imagine yourself doing now, walking into a room and sitting down next to a stranger? I'm pretty sure the answer is no.
No, well, I lived in London for a long time. So approaching strangers was either going to get you stabbed or socially ostracised forever, especially on public transport, so that's not really an option. But yeah, the thought of actually meeting someone genuinely for the first time is the weird part, because normally in every social situation I'm in now, like, I've seen them on Facebook, we've got Twitter friends in common, mm-hmm. we're all in the same, you know, secret group that talks about sinister things on another form of social media, but yeah, or Instagram, I've seen people's faces like 100 times normally before I meet them, so
yeah.
I think, yeah, maybe if they reminded me of someone, or if they had a particularly desperate get me out of this situation vibe. Still do the whole, wow, this woman needs to get away from the creepy guy moment.
Yeah.
But
hi, so good to see you.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, thanks for waiting for me. Sorry I'm late. Yeah, that kind of deal. But yeah, I can't actually picture that now, walking up to a stranger in a coffee shop or a pub or anything.
Yeah, I mean, so the reason that I brought that up is because as I told you, we've had a couple of questions into the podcast mailbox, which is my actual mailbox, but I give it a different email address, and it all goes to the same place.
It totally counts.
And both of them are to do with friendship, sort of maintaining friendships and making friends, and one of the questioners asked about making friends as an adult. So I'm going to read out both of the questions. We had one from Ruth, who asked how to move past loneliness. I know my friends are there, Ruth said, but I'm paranoid about them moving on from me at the moment. I'm just not sure how to reach out. And that was the one that we were going to discuss. And then a couple of days ago, I got one from Billy No Mates, who asked how you make friends as an adult. And Billy said, I'm feeling pretty lonely and I would love to feel like I have a support group around me. So, yeah, they're kind of two sides of the same coin, really. You know, so one's about making new friends, one's about nurturing the friends that you already have. And I kind of feel like the second part of that is easier, particularly once, like us, you hit your mid to late 30s. But even, you know, talking about nurturing the friends that you already have and maintaining friendships, you know, I can fess up and say that you and I can be kind of shit at that.
We are. We have to start from a place of honesty on that, and we can have... It's kind of unthinkable to 20 years ago us that we could go, like, a day without... And that was before we had phones and, like, so much social media. So, yeah, that's been a big adjustment to go, like, more than a day without talking. And now we can, it can stretch into a week, maybe two, I think, is probably a record without... And the thing is, though, as well, it's the passive interaction,
mm-hmm.
because I know what's going on with you because you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, you're wherever. And I think it's very easy to fall out of the habit of directly interacting and saying, hey, you look hot today, or, you know, I totally disagree with your political position on this tiny issue of no importance, because remember those. So that's probably the first place, is shaking off this, I know what's going on, everything's fine, I'm up to date.
It's weird because, like, I was thinking about this earlier, and obviously for a big chunk of our friendship you lived in London. And I kind of feel like we saw it in those days, we saw each other less, but it was more quality. And even then, did we even see each other less? Like, now you're living in Edinburgh.
I actually think after being back in Edinburgh for a couple of years, I think we worked out that we'd actually probably seen each other on a more frequent basis, because when you're 40 minutes away, well, an hour, let's be honest, it's easy to say, oh, well, we can wait another week.
Yeah.
Or we'll do it next time, because I'm going to be through, like, a bunch of times. But obviously real life gets in the way of that. Like, just because you're in Edinburgh doesn't mean I don't have a job thing or need to be somewhere else, or, you know, be too tired to get out of my bed or under a pile of cats. So yeah, it's kind of, again, it's quite a passive thing of letting stuff happen. And I don't want to, you know, not every meeting can be a birthday party.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's easy to take for granted that you will come to Edinburgh a lot, or I will have lots of reasons to come to Glasgow, so I don't need to check in every time and be like, hey, can I come and see you? But I think we've started doing that a bit more lately, and that's been quite a nice development.
Yeah, but, like, because back in the day when you lived in London, if I was coming down to London for a thing, I would stay with you and we'd get, like, a good sort of chunk of time. And
we'd plan around it. We would make, you know, things happen so that, you know, the days were filled with doing us stuff and going out. And
plus, you're one of, I think, maybe four people that I could stay overnight with. Like, I was down in London last month for a gig, and people offered, and, you know, like, good friends, and, you know, good friends would probably be listening to this, so don't take offense when, you know, like, you know, I stayed in a hotel, and that's sort of my go-to thing, because, like, I like to have that sort of bubble where
it's kind of knowing each other's boundaries without having to, like, go and enforce them. Like, I can tell even now if you're like, wow, too much human interaction, it's just like a look that goes over your face, and maybe people who haven't known you for as long don't notice it. But it's like, you know, and we've always had a friendship where we can sit in the same room and do two completely separate things, and it's not a problem. And I know that if you come and stay with us, which you don't have to do as much now, but you still could, we do still have a spare room. You know, there's going to be a point where you're like, okay, I'm going in here and closing the door, and I don't find that rude. I don't find that, like, you know, not respecting the friendship. It's just, we know each other well enough to know we have limits and only so many human hours in the day.
Yeah. And even coming through Edinburgh, you know, trains are expensive, and it's like, you know, I need to maximise my time, which is something that I suffer from in most areas of my life. Like, how can I make this window of time as efficient as humanly possible?
Yeah, so then you end up gravitating to one central location and trying to cram in 15 events into, like, 6
hours. Well, the last time I was in Edinburgh was to record one of these with your good wife, and it gave me the excuse to come and see you guys and also make it tax deductible.
Yeah, well, we're really useful that way. And also to get screaming sound effects from our cats in the background.
Yes. My cats don't tend to scream in the background of podcasts. So.
No, they're avoiding us right now. They don't trust me. Even if I've known them their whole lives, and they still think I'm pretty shady. So cats maybe do know best.
Out to your friends, and I guess I'm kind of sticking with this word nurturing. It wasn't a word that Ruth used, but I really like this idea of nurturing your friendships. And you talked a bit about the passive social media culture, you know, the liking and the quick comment, and you know, the likes are appreciated. I do have, you
I know the attention threshold is high.
A bit of a stake in social media, like, the please keep the likes coming. But yeah, one thing I hate about I'm trying to fight against in the passive social media culture is this bit where someone you've maybe not spoken to in a while jumps on something and you go, oh, we need to catch up, yeah, let's, and then that's it, you say that and it never
which
happens.
Basically means we've turned into our parents, because that's what happens when they I can see it repeating itself. It's like they used to bump into people in the supermarket and they hadn't seen them for like 6 years since their mutual kids were in primary school, and it'd be, oh, we must have dinner sometime, and nobody ever exchanged the numbers or made a concrete plan, like, what about next Saturday? It was always just this kind of, we must, but there's zero obligation in it. So yeah, maybe it's a kind of holding yourself accountable would be a good way around it, of saying, not just let's have a vague thing, but hey, I am doing a thing near you, do you want to come to it? Or, you know, I have a day free, let's do something on that specific day. And even if it doesn't pan out, I think it maybe makes you think more like, hey, that was a perfect opportunity, so let's not blow it.
Yeah. But yeah, I've definitely been trying, I guess, as a kind of practical tip, when the let's catch up thing rears its head, I now go, yes, let's, straight in the DMs. Here are some potential dates. And I did this to somebody that I'd not seen in a while, a couple of months ago, and she was stunned. I mean, like, she was happily stunned. She liked the idea that we were actually catching up, but I don't think she expected, because like I'm one of these people. So I had a couple of friends round last night who now live in the States, and they're over maybe once a year for a chunk of time, and they have to catch up with everyone in this window of time. And when Stu messaged me to say, when are we seeing you? You're the busiest person we know. Let us know when and we'll work around you. I appreciate that. But yeah, like that's definitely, you know, I think a lot of the people that we've had on the show are into the whole planner culture.
Yes, I live with one of them.
Getting
I have so many planners in my house and I don't use any of them.
I will refer you back to episode 3 with Kate. I think planners was even in the title.
Yeah.
Was it episode 3? Was it episode 4? I can't even remember.
Somewhere
might be
right
four.
There.
Yeah. It was four. Yeah, like the planner thing is great for, you know, maybe even having set days that are like your pal days.
Yeah. It's also
if your schedule permits that, obviously.
Yeah, the one thing I like about planners when I use them, which isn't often, is that it lets you see where the gaps are, whereas when you're really overwhelmed and like super busy, you feel like every single second's already accounted for. So it's nice to go, oh wait, Thursday night's free, then, you know, it's maybe better for people who aren't able to separate out the busy from the calm, which I can be sometimes, so I do sympathize on that one.
I also highly recommend nights like Tuesdays and Wednesdays for getting cheap food.
Oh yeah, true.
So I'm sure there are many apps available, and I'm not just going to sing the praises of Meerkat Meals, but you know,
it does do the trick.
I do love a wee buy one get one. It's always great for a catch up.
It's something I've kind of stolen from date nights as well, because it was kind of, if we're going to go to the cinema, let's move that to Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yes.
Then we can go twice if we want for the same amount of money, especially because films tend to come out in clusters. There's like, there's nothing you want to see for 6 weeks, and then you want to see everything. So we've been trying to do that a little bit, and then I was like, well, if you're already using it to get quality time in one way, then yeah, it's probably quite a good way of making friend dates as well. Because yeah, couple life does sometimes stampede all over everything, so you have to eke stuff out. That I'm only saying this because I've been on like 17 trips with my in-laws in the last 2 months. So tired.
What are the barriers to nurturing your friendships? I mean, obviously, as we get older,
everyone.
We all get busier. You know, I say we all get busier, but you think about, you know, back in the day when we were had, you know, 19,000 assignments to do and
multiple jobs
and seminars to prepare for. Well,
and no money to travel or do anything, and we still managed it, so
yeah
sometimes I think it is energy levels are the biggest barrier ever. But I think as well we kind of turned inwards a bit much on the self-care thing. I'm kind of pushing back against it a little bit in my life, because it's a great indulgence, but I feel like a lot of the time I'm sitting bored with a face mask on trying to access meditation. Is actually like that could have been a half hour phone call that would have made me feel so much better with someone I actually wanted to talk to.
Well, yeah, that's about looking at self-care in a more holistic sense. Like self-care isn't necessarily, you know,
just
having a wank in the bath.
And you just end up with glitter in unfortunate places, which is my number one rule in life, is not, not to be exposed to glitter really in any format. So
but yeah, self-care can be catching up with your people.
I had to kind of shift my focus that way, because I got the look after yourself bit, but only in a really kind of narrow way.
Mm.
So yeah, branching that out a bit into not just like things you can do, but also like seeking out stuff that specifically makes you feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of shift has been like a bit eye-opening for me. I was like, oh right, okay, so actively do things that make you feel a little bit high or a little bit happy or really quite peaceful, and that can include hitting things, but you know, it's a bit broader than I first thought. So maybe if you haven't quite shifted that focus from, you know, how do I fix me, to other people being part of what makes you happy.
Yeah, looking at all the different aspects of yourself. I mean, obviously, you know, I don't know Ruth's situation, and you know, there can be bigger barriers as well, like structural barriers. There can be things like, you know, once you get to our age, childcare responsibilities, for example.
Another care responsibilities as well, actually, because we're getting old enough for that to start being a factor.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, one of my closest friends has recently had a baby. Mm. And I guess part of that is part of the responsibility of having a friend who's had a big life shift like that is that, you know, you need to
show up. You
as in me needs to show up and needs to take on a little extra bit of the burden of the planning, and you know, I'm coming to you.
Yeah, the traveling and the actually making it happen in the first place. Sometimes it shifts back and forth, but yeah, when someone's got a big reason not to have the capacity for that.
Luckily with this particular friend, a big chunk of our socialising was built around TV box sets. So,
nice.
You know, you can do it in either house, and if you have to put the subtitles on because the baby's sleeping, it's not...
That's fine. You can always not watch with wireless headphones. It's like a silent disco, but with like really dark noir stuff instead. It's all good. And, you know, that was a big theme of our early friendship as well, was the X-Files box sets. That was our...
Yeah.
Those were our foundational years.
Yeah, so my best memories involve you taping episodes of The X-Files for me.
Yes.
Before you had access to nefarious means of obtaining TV before the air date. You had, was it Sky that it was on, and I don't remember.
I think at one point one of my very early internet friends, who I'd only met because you got me into The X-Files, she was getting tapes sent to her from her friend in the States, and then was copying them for me, and I was copying them for you at one point. It was piracy, like, with legwork. It was really quite something.
Yeah, it's like mixtape culture, but
with
Gillian Anderson. No one was watching for the aliens.
No, I can't pick any of those out of a lineup, but
friends as an adult, which I think is like is one of those standard questions that come. I read a lot of advice columns, which was part of the reason behind wanting to start an advice podcast, is I love advice columns, and making friends as an adult is one of those perennial themes.
Mm.
And the advice is always join local meetup groups. What is a meetup group? Is that just an American thing?
I don't know. Like, somewhere in the world, people are clustering in public locations, but I find it doesn't quite work. Like, because, like, a meetup group can be so vague. Like, you know, find other people...
Is it playing Pokemon Go on a street corner? Which happens outside my work.
Yeah, well, I think that's how my brother socialises, actually. So, you know, as ever, we are quite different in this regard. But, I think it's got to have something at its heart. It's got to have something to hold on to, because the amount of random people I encounter in my life that I just don't ever want to interact with again.
Yeah.
It can't just be we're all humans with a pulse who want more friends. But I think the only way that's been successful for me in the past few years, because, 5 years ago we packed up from London and came back, is it's the common interest, which is a little bit of a cliche as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I found the thing is, don't put pressure on it right away to be a meetup. Like, we have... We had a writing group in Edinburgh for freelancers who wanted to, you know, get out during the day and
talk to people,
hold each other accountable so that we didn't just sit staring at the walls all day. And that got kind of hijacked and turned into someone else's social life. But initially it was great because you would go to like nice places, meet a slightly different mix of people every week, and you would actually get stuff done and get to talk about stuff that was bugging you. And I'm a very verbal planner and plotter, so for having an audience to be like, how do I do this? It was great. And I've still, you know, even though the writing group itself has folded, I now still have some friends from that group, like 4 or 5 new people who I just wouldn't have crossed paths with probably otherwise.
Who's the most recent friend that you made? I mean, you don't need to name them, obviously.
Probably Lucy, who I'm going to name her anyway, because there's 5,000 Lucys in Edinburgh alone. No,
hi Lucy, hope you're listening, give me 5 stars.
I'm totally sending you this link. Yeah, and that was actually from one of the ways I've said was a taboo for me for meeting other people, which was other people's friends. We got co-opted into going to a birthday weekend away in, it wasn't the lakes this time because I hate the lakes, Northumbria, and we were asked if we could give someone a lift, and I was like, 3 hours in the car with a stranger, and basically blamed it all on my wife and was like, if she turns out to be a psycho, she's killing you first. But no, it turned out to be 3 hours of, oh my god, we have like 9 million things in common, including all our favourite geek things, and half the Netflix output. So yeah, one of those things I was completely resistant to and had a good grump about for a week beforehand turned out to be meeting a really cool person who is now, like, we were hanging out the other night at New Haven in the harbour, so...
Oh, those, you know, pictures of you having
fish and chips, in the sunshine, which
it's,
you can only do
this weather that makes me want fish and chips.
It's just, you can only do it 2 days a year, so you have to go both times.
Take advantage while you can.
But yeah, so it goes to show that for all my rules, I may also be a bit of an idiot. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, you know, what other ways there are of making friends as an adult, and it is proximity, I guess. There's no Tinder for pals, really.
But, like, should there be? But then, you know, men will ruin it. They ruin everything. but yeah, like, I remember back before we had apps, back when we was gaydar girls was the only way to meet lesbians. And there were so many people who in their profile had just looking for friendship. And it just didn't stop them getting propositioned every turn. Mm. So maybe, yeah, maybe this is one thing an app isn't going to solve.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's workplaces, and I'm lucky in that I've got, you know, well, I've got quite a few people that I'm friendly with at work, and at least one person that, you know, I would happily see more than one of them outside of work. But, you know, among, like, the people who work in my office, you know, there's one who's a friend that I socialise with. I suppose there's always the danger of, you know, you're being forced into proximity with people that you might not have anything in common, and it's hard to, I guess, rely on that as a way of meeting friends, just thinking, like, the sort of practical advice that we can give to Billy. Yeah, what else is there when you're, like, we go to work, we come home.
Yeah, it takes up more hours than you really want to think about sometimes.
And I have a feeling that it's gonna come back to social media, and, like, what does that say
about how you can use it. But then our friendship, like, grew on the internet and survived on the internet at so many points, so I think that's valid. I think that's fair.
I love how you're going on to the second part of my question before we talk about the first. That's great. In sync, man. But yeah, like, so you talked about, you know, the most recent friend that you, and I think about who are the friends that I made as an adult. You know, like, I was out with my friend Alice last week, and she's somebody that, you know, met through blogging, talked to on Twitter, and you know, aggressively courted her and did the whole, yeah, let's meet up, yes, let's, now we're going for pizza.
And also, I think a good way of doing it, instead of just showing up to random social stuff you don't know if you'll like, and this is maybe because we're both writery people, but, and I'm going to get pelters for this in a minute, but go to people's launches, unless you're having an anxious day and you can't make it, but, like, go to launches for things that you're going to read or you're going to listen to or you're going to go and see in a theatre, because chances are that most of the people in that room have at least that in common with you.
Yeah, so there's a lot more of that in Edinburgh, I think.
Yeah, and I think we probably need to, we Edinburghers who are almost, we're not bi-coastal because we're not really on coasts, but by M8al, and it has Nate in it, see, like, we maybe need to make more of an effort when we are in Glasgow to not just, like, get in and out like it's a deliverance or something. Like, we need to come and engage with stuff and, yeah, and plan stuff through here and don't just have our little Edinburgh bubble and our Glasgow bubble. Because...
No, launches is a good shout, though. Like, I was at a book launch. Well, I guess while we're talking about launches, if I get this out before the 1st of August, my husband's having a book launch of Waterstones in Glasgow. Go to it. I don't know if I'll get this out before the 1st of August.
Even I'm going to try and come because it's a lesbian book, so, you know, I have to, have to support the team. But
Some of us will unfortunately be doing IRL big sisterly duties that evening and missing the launch, which I'm quite upset about. But yeah, no, but launches is a really good shout because they tend to be, you know, there's a decent crowd of people. If you are a naturally anxious person, well, you are going for a thing.
And there's a structure to it.
Exactly.
That's a beautiful thing.
And if you have to sit and read something on your phone, nobody's going to judge you for
we
that.
We have both done that at launches, including for people we should really be paying attention to. So, but it is, you've got the structure of everyone's milling about, no one knows each other, there's the talk or the Q&A sort of part of it. And then there's a sign-in. So if you get there and you think, wow, everyone looks like a serial killer, go and get your book signed and, like, no harm, no foul.
Yeah, and if you don't buy a book, actually, nobody's really going to notice unless it's one of those ones where there's
unless,
just three people.
No, seriously, buy the book. We really like when you do that.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying don't buy the book, but, you know, if you don't...
That was just journalist versus novelist there.
Yeah, but I suppose, yeah, even... I guess expanding that a little bit further, even things like gigs, there's always a lot of free music stuff going on in Glasgow. And with that, it's a case of keeping an eye on Facebook. Ooh. Actually responding to your Facebook invites.
Yes. Political stuff.
Political stuff.
Where is the most important place to have some kind of overlap politically? Because generally, friction otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what, when you get that thingy to go to Holyrood on your day off for a march for something really awesome and equality building, actually go. Don't just say, maybe... and then go to Pret a Manger and have a crap sandwich instead. So, you know, I would never go to Pret. I've never liked Pret, but it's the principle.
Oh, no, so I can't eat any of the sandwiches. I love their croissants, but...
they're not to be trusted.
I can't eat any of their sandwiches or salads.
And support your local indie cafe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but...
particularly if they make the sandwiches from scratch and leave the mail out.
Yeah, and it's things like so many people I know, and particularly, you know, having so many queer people all overlapping... Pride is like a big homing beacon for everyone every year. I don't really know what's happening with Glasgow this year, I'd say. But yeah, so where is your equivalent of that? Where are all the writers going? Where are all the independence voters going? Where are all the football fans going? You know,
the first couple of times will always be a bit anxiety inducing though. And I guess it's a question of having to show up enough to get to know faces and feeling a bit more comfortable with
and
approaching
the thing
people.
With big public events is there's going to be a lot of people in the same boat and you can take along people who are a bit more ambivalent just that one time, so you know, to get over the anxiety, because I always find someone to grab when I'm a bit I don't know if I should do this, and yeah, that's part of what having a wife is for, to be honest. It's like 70% of the reason I'm married, but well, you come to things I feel awkward at, so I don't feel awkward anymore. But yeah, and it can be relatives, work people, or, you know, friends that you're only going to see that once, but, you know, it's a way of networking that into more people and seeing you at your best when you're, you know, around someone you like.
I'm going to bounce back to social media a wee bit though, because, okay. Like, you know, I started talking about that and then you said, well, our friendship was kind of sustained on that, and but yeah, because you and I have been meeting people on the internet since before meeting people on the internet was something that my mum did.
Yeah, back when we had to lie about meeting people on the internet.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was all, no, we have a friend in common. Yeah, she goes to my school. No, crap, I haven't been at school in 12 years. you know, that kind of thing. Those kind of lies, totally harmless. But when everyone was a potential serial killer instead of us all just giving out our information for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was funny, like, the early internet was... that was where I made my friends. I didn't get on well at school with people. And it was like, I found my tribe on Direlands, on LiveJournal. There's a t-shirt, I found my tribe on Direland.
It's responsible for so much. And not to plug, but I actually have an essay co-written with my wife.
Will you stop? Stop looking at my notebook. I was like, that leads us quite nicely into an essay that you wrote. Okay, so yes,
I will
that does lead us very nicely.
Because who's responsible for me meeting my wife?
That is true.
Yeah, exactly.
Annie DeFranco has a lot to answer for.
She really does, and not just that whole slavery plantation thing. But You know, she's apologised.
She got uncancelled.
Yeah, fine. It's all good. But yeah, and it was easier then because, like, interacting on those platforms required a level of trust or a level of anonymity, which you would then sort of gradually eke out your identity to each other. And we had the advantage of already knowing each other in person. So
yeah.
If you liked someone, I could then pick up your friendships by proxy. And we're still friends with a lot of those people.
Yeah.
At least on Facebook. But, you know, and like that's led to us all meeting people 5, 10, 15 years after the fact of first talking to them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that showed up on Instagram when I went to Vancouver and I met Kimberly for the first time. And we got on a shop's Instagram account. Because they were so excited by our story. But it was exciting, to be fair, to someone who I'd spoken to for 15 years and hadn't met yet.
It is. And also, while we're talking about social media and stuff like that, as someone who frequently has I'm not going outside kinds of anxiety, I think sometimes we're too quick to dismiss online interaction as like not counting. And even now that everyone is online, it's still seen as less than. It's still seen as like not real friendship. But, you know, I've had conversations at 4 a.m. with people in time zones that, you know, I still can't actually count to, but, you know, those have kept me going through like rough nights, good nights, all kinds of things. And yeah, I don't think we should write that off. And a lot of the times when like we haven't been able to see each other for a long time because of you weren't coming to London and I couldn't get up to Scotland and it was all you know, it was the text messages and then the iMessages and the DMs and everything else that kind of, you know, that let us keep everything ticking over until we could like meet up in person and talk about everybody where they couldn't see us.
But yeah, so I talked over you when you brought up the essay, which was very rude of me. Yeah, so you co-wrote an essay with your wife Kate, who listeners to this podcast will already be familiar with, an anthology called Better Than Real Life.
Better than in real life, yeah.
Better than IRL. So tell me a bit about that then.
Well, that was pretty cool because I don't have the freelance career quite yet that my wife has built up, but our love story is kind of very time sensitive in that we were introduced because I had gone off to London and you had gone to Edinburgh for your master's, and that's where you crossed paths with another Diaryland friend in the form of Kate. And that sort of auto vouch for each other if you've met, and like that automatically just put everyone in the same social circle. And then yeah, you or
what was it a bit like, oh, you know how you're a lesbian now, I know another lesbian, maybe you should talk.
It was still at that stage, you didn't have as many people to choose from then, but it was the age old hey, do you know this other lesbian? And no, now you do. And it was completely orchestrated, and it should have fallen flat on its face and never been a thing, but well, you know, it was obviously supposed to work out. But
and that was how many years ago now?
Many years. Not as many years,
not as, many years friends. As we've known each other. It's fine.
But yeah, 16 years.
Nobody's judging here.
16 years at the start of June was the anniversary of our first date, which you were also at, along with another friend, dear friend of mine. So it was a group thing for the security of, if this date goes completely disastrously, at least my friends will be there. And then I ditched them all to go snogging girls in the street. So I have
such good memories of that night. So it was an Annie DeFranco gig, but my overwhelming memory is of us all meeting up in a hotel room, which I guess was where you and your other friend who came up from London were staying in the hotel, and we had a bottle of red wine and nothing to drink it with, and somebody had to use the sugar bowl.
That sounds about right. Yeah. And yeah, it was just one of those like perfect nights out that just went, nobody was late, nothing was a hassle. We must have booked right next to the venue as well.
Yeah, so it was super close.
It was like wandering distance, and I didn't know Edinburgh at all at that point. So, and the fact that it wasn't Edinburgh where I didn't live, and yet here I am 16 years later back living in there Edinburgh and quite happy about
with
it.
With that same lesbian.
Yeah, which is a complete betrayal of my West Coast roots, but you know.
The things we do for love.
Indeed.
I don't think can you buy that? So that book was crowdfunded and it's not been printed yet.
No, I think it comes out later in the year. I think it's an autumn release.
I backed it. Good. So I'm looking forward to reading the essay.
You will get an early copy, but yeah, the great thing is it's not just our story, although it's obviously awesome, but there's so many just from the descriptions. There's a bunch that I'm dying to read about. you know, all the forums people were on.
And there's actually, there's people, other people that I know on the internet who have no connection with, you know, you guys.
We've never overlapped, and now here we all are in a book about that time. And I think, you know, we're all pretty harsh on the internet now, and like how it makes us miserable and makes us anxious, and social media is ruining the world. And, you know, there was a time where that just wasn't, it was like a special club for cool people who got it. That was basically what the internet used to be. And I miss that, and I don't think that's entirely gone. I think we still have our bubbles.
Yeah, it hasn't entirely gone, but you need to not look at the replies to Scottish politicians' tweets.
Not ever, not one time.
To find it.
You'll find yourself clicking view comments or view replies, and you need to just back away at that point and close the programme down.
Yeah, it's never a good idea. But yeah, so, yes, you co-wrote an essay, but... you know, you're writing, you are now gearing up for the launch of your third novel.
I am, but the only problem with that is it keeps reminding me that book four is due at the end of the month. it's fine, it's like three chapters away from done. But yeah, I can't quite believe it's been a really weird like year and a half, 2 years. I accidentally, do you know what, I'm just gonna fess up right from the start. I was writing fan fiction because that has been my creative outlet for years when I haven't had time to do anything else, and it has fit perfectly, and not enough TV shows had queer characters in them. That's improving. But now, that was my main outlet. It was like, let's take this show and make them gayer. And from that, someone recommended this big, long fan fiction. I was writing about ballet dancers, and someone said, hey, something like this would make a good book. And yeah, that...
And it did.
And that all started with DMs on Twitter. So, you know, let no one speak against social media in my presence. But, so here we are, three books in, which is insane. The next one is all about tennis players, so I'm extra super obsessed with Wimbledon this year. I was at the French Open as well, but nobody cared, so fine.
And it is called?
It's called Slammed, but that was not the original suggested title. The title we wanted, but probably can't publish under, was... conjured up, when was that? Earlier in the year? It was like March, February.
The subtitle of this book has to be Game, Set and Snatch.
It does.
Come on.
It's a lesbian romance. You know, really come up with a better subtitle than that. I dare you. I might have that made into postcards actually for promo.
Oh, that'd be amazing. So, I do have a quote on a print now.
There'll be no stopping you. We'll have to get it in A3. Yeah, so it's been fun, and I'm also diversifying that a little bit and trying to be a TV writer, because the full circle process from give me your TV characters, I'm going to make them gay, is I'm going to write them gay in the first place.
Yes. I mean, it's just more efficient that way.
It is, and also then people can write fanfic of my TV show and I won't be a dick to them like so many creators have historically been. I'm looking at you, Anne Rice. I'm not going to threaten to sue anyone. I'm going to say go make them queerer or, you know, more asexual, whatever the hell you want to make them this month.
Yeah, they probably won't want to make your characters more queer.
No, but don't straight wash them. I won't stand by and let you like inflict heterosexuality on them. That's just not happening.
Yeah, it's massively overrated. So for people who are as intrigued by the concept of lesbian tennis as I am, where can they order the book?
It should be going up for... there'll be a cover reveal very soon, and it'll be going up for pre-order at Elva, who are my publisher, and that's YLVA, which is the Swedish for wolf. So we literally move in a pack of lesbians who write books.
And if Game, Set and Snatch isn't there, obviously
there's a couple of existing
are a couple of existing books, so The Music in the Mirror,
that's the ballet one, and it's a long read, and I think it's pretty hot. And then I decided to come home to my roots and write a little love letter to London, which is Major Surgery, and it's hot doctors being badasses in a big London hospital and hating each other's guts, but of course that never lasts,
in a sexy way.
Yeah, it that also gets hot, but it takes them a little bit longer to get there. So yes, that's basically people will have a position and then they will end up in a sexual position, and it'll be a good story along the way. That is all I can promise you.
Thank you. are, in fact, a big sister. Do you have any sisterly advice? Possibly not for your brother, but for people.
If I was giving it to my brother, it would be reply to your WhatsApp and stop being a dick. All I did was offer him a PlayStation game, so clearly that was beyond the veil. But big sisterly advice, oh gosh. Yeah, I have typical older sibling syndrome of everything is my responsibility and it won't get done if I don't do it. So I think I might be quite burdensome that way. But yeah, maybe try being nicer to your siblings than I frequently am. They're not always terrible. Some people like their siblings. It's weird. It makes me uncomfortable. So yeah, I am officially the world's worst big sister, but I wear that title with pride.
But you're an excellent best friend.
Yes, I channel all my sibling energies into friendships because they're much more worthwhile. And also no one forced us to sit in the same room for more than an hour, so we did it through choice, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, we're on hour three this evening, so it's quite good going.
We're doing quite well, and that's including food, and we didn't throw any at each other.
Mm-hmm.
So really, we've got this nailed.
What are you loving at the moment?
Oh gosh, what am I loving? I am still on a Gentleman Jack high. I think it's just about wrapped up here. I was watching on a slightly different schedule because as I was just saying earlier tonight, I follow the entire lesbian internet, so I can't watch anything queer late because I will be spoiled relentlessly. But yeah, I hate historical drama. I'm not a huge fan of Yorkshire, I'll be honest. It has its moments. But yeah, despite that, those two things and Saran Jones are just like infinitely watchable. If you don't watch the rest of it, watch episode 7 for her facial expressions and you will die. It is just the best thing ever committed to celluloid. It is so good.
Have they been gift?
Oh yes, and I have a whole selection of them saved. So I will be spamming Twitter with them at some point this week just to emphasise the greatness of these facial expressions.
What about book-wise? You're normally reading good books.
Book-wise, I have just started The New Kate Atkinson, which took me a little while to get into because I kind of forgot where I was in her universe with Jackson Brodie. I've just done a...
Is that the one with the blue cover?
It is, Big Sky. And I do love Kate Atkinson's books because they're so immersive, and it helps that also she writes about places that I know really well. Mm. So I picked up one of the whatever Jackson Brodie one is set in Edinburgh during the festival, and that got me into her after everyone else. And then she wrote some amazing wartime stuff, Transcription.
Yes.
Which is set in London, all around like Portland Place and all the places I love at the top of Regent Street. So yeah, that's my current rec. She hasn't gone off piste yet, so I'm currently loving that. And the one thing I am so bad at the moment is reading physical books. I'm such a Kindle whore now.
Yeah, same.
But the one thing I'm persevering with and I'm risking wrist sprain for is the Ely Percy novel. Vicky
Romeo
and Jules. That's it. I was worried I'm going to mess it up and get it back to front, and I'm like, no, Vicky Romeo and Jules. It is excellent. We will get the correct link and stuff in
there. Yeah, and my copy of that has just arrived actually. Because it was recommended to me really highly.
It's great. It's just I'm about a third of the way in at the moment, and I really what I want to do is just take like an afternoon and just read the whole thing to the end now. But I keep
the last time I did that was with Kate's last book, and I spent an entire Saturday. It's like, I'm gonna be so productive today, I'll read a few chapters of my book first. No, I just stayed in my pajamas all day, read the whole thing, ordered in takeaway. It was fantastic.
I actually did the same thing, and I am a hard sell on Victorian fiction. And obviously I had the thing is as well, when you've read a book on and off in the draft phases, or you've like had a long discussion about a particularly tricky plot point, sometimes by the time it gets out you're just relieved. And you're not really there for the hype, like all the people who are just getting their hands on it.
Yeah.
But I think with The Unquiet Heart this time, I don't know, I think maybe Kate, or maybe it's because I was busy with my own books, which I wasn't with the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't asking as many questions and I wasn't checking in maybe as much. So it was really nice to read it and not only like appreciate how good it is, but be surprised as well. Because I knew some of those plot points were coming.
Yeah.
I'd heard the grumbling about them. But it was really like just being a reader again, which I've kind of missed in the past wee while. And yeah, I started out with, I'm just going to read a wee bit so that I can get Kate off my back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read the whole thing in one night.
Yeah.
So yeah, another good read there. Biased though we are.
Well, we fangirl our family because...
We stan only the best.
We do.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for doing a pod with me.
Yay.
Where on the internet can people find you?
You can find me in all sorts of places. I am at lolakeely _ on Twitter, because all the cool people have underscores.
They do. Not this podcast, though.
I'm Keely Lola, which is backwards, on Instagram. And I have my own website, which I'm in the middle of rebuilding, which it's a bit like, you know, you leave your own house to last. I did a redesign for major surgery, and now I'm getting it ready for Slammed. So I'm at lolakeely.co.uk as well. So you can come and say hi. I'll have contact forms, and you can leave me funny messages on there, which is always good.
Send Gentleman Jack gifts.
Oh, and I'm Dame Lola on Tumblr. I always forget that's like actual social media. It's really just where I keep my pretty lady pictures.
I mean, that's for a specialist audience.
Yeah, it's like, you're not going to get my deep inner thoughts there. You're going to get like inappropriate ramblings in the tags.
If you like hot women and hashtag jokes.
Lots of hashtag jokes and cat memes.
And yeah. Liverpool FC.
Yeah, many Liverpools. That they are my team, and I don't know if you know this, but we're actually champions of Europe for the sixth time, so yeah, you might have missed that in July in June, sorry, but that did happen, and yeah, I had to watch it with a Man United supporter, so but yeah, go Liverpool.
Cool, thank you. I will see you IRL, other than right now.
Yes, we're going to get off this podcast and make a plan for the next time we see each other.
Yay!
Nurture.
The chat, and I guess just having my back for the past 20 years, because that's no mean feat. Slammed is out on Wednesday the 2nd of October, 2 days before we celebrate our 20th Bezerversary on the 4th, but you can pre-order from Ulva Publishing right now to get your ebook immediately on release. That's ylva-publishing.com. Physical formats are, of course, available. You can find links to Lola Keeley's work and social medias at lastyearsgirl.pixlet.net. Just click on the big podcast button with my face on it and look for episode 7, the one with all the questions about friendship. Topical name time! From Your Big Sister is hosted by me, Lisa Marie Verla, and produced and edited by me too. You can subscribe to From Your Big Sister on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Acast, which means I would love it if you rated and reviewed the show and told all your friends. Please, please cancel out that snidey one-star rating that I got on Apple Podcasts. It makes me so sad. It's also streaming on Podomatic, where you'll find an RSS feed so that you can subscribe via your podcatcher of choice, and on Spotify too. The show is on Twitter, From Your Big Sister. That's From YR Big Sister, because I think it looks cute. If you have a dilemma that you need some sisterly advice on, you can send it in using the form at lastyearsgirl.pixlet.net/podcast, and you might hear the answer on a future episode. You can be as anonymous as you like, it's positively encouraged. Theme music is by Blue Dot Sessions, used under a Creative Commons license, and this show wouldn't exist without, and is dedicated to, Dominic and Marie Claire. Catch up soon.